It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I had no idea this came out years before it was famous.
We were very progressive at Cumberland Valley High School.
Clearly.
Somehow, we were ahead of the curve with Macarena.
Nothing else, just the Macarena.
Also, I know. We were also ahead of the curve with square dancing. Like, they taught us square dancing in gym class.
Well, that's weird.
It was like in the same session as Macarena. We did all sorts of dancing lessons. In gym class.
You know what has replaced that in the last 30 years? Things with computers.
I know. I do want to ask you this. The midlife crisis thing.
Okay.
I'm 50. Have I had it already? Am I heading into it? Should I be aware that...
I think you had it.
I did?
Yeah. Remember when you were like 300 pounds? I think it was. It was after football and your changeover and all though, and you figured it out.
Jeez.
That is a jeez.
I'm through the midlife crisis.
Yeah, you're good. You're on the other side.
All right. So I managed it.
I think you had it. I'm going to go back. I'm going to actually say
I don't know that I've had it.
I'm going to say more recently. I disagree with James because that's more like 4 years ago. I'm going to say about 2 years ago when you were thinking of getting a dog.
He got a dog.
No, I know. Yeah. But I'm saying when he was thinking about it, he was thinking about it because he was trying to kind of like trigger a little something different in your mind, in your brain, your way of being.
That's an interesting approach right there.
That's my interpretation.
But my kids also were a big part of the reason why we went dog.
I know.
And they're, you know, at the time they were 13 and 17.
But you were also, at that time, you were girlfriend deficient.
Deficient.
And we were recommending it as a potential, hey, take the dog to a park, pick up a babe.
Wow. I mean, I wasn't looking at it as an ulterior motive.
I was. For
like,
you.
Duping someone into liking me.
Yeah. All right. Good morning to everyone. Did John have a midlife crisis? You be the judge. 315-592-9494.
Is that tomorrow's poll question?
That is.
I don't know. Like, and are you going to have one? Did you have one? I think we're,
I don't know.
Why did this just come up? Because you just asked me in the last commercial break, you know, am I having a midlife?
Well,
did you just...
Well, I was talking in a break with some of the engineers. I was talking with them. I feel like we're trying to identify whether we are crisising.
I don't think everyone goes through one, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
So. Michael Jordan did not have one. His life was too good.
He did switch to baseball for a little.
But that was pre-midlife. He switched to baseball.
He was young. That was like an early life crisis.
That was like a quarter life crisis.
Yeah, quarter life crisis.
Yeah, but I think when you're that confident, I don't think you can have a crisis of that nature. I think the crisis usually is you're starting to doubt yourself.
Hold on. So Michael Jordan never had a midlife crisis?
He's had crisis, but not the midlife crisis. Hmm. He's too confident a guy. I think if you're that confident, I don't think you can... that's just my opinion.
I generally agree with that.
Yeah. All right, 215-592-9494. All right, so we did
it. So you can avoid the midlife crisis entirely just by being confident.
Maybe.
I think Joe is saying that he is going to avoid the midlife crisis.
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Is that your plan? Do you feel like you've...
I don't think people plan for a midlife crisis. I don't think you think about it. And you're like, what's my plan for handling it when it comes along?
Let's be honest with one another. Like, if you see any inklings that I got a midlife crisis coming on...
Yeah, if you buy a sports car, a convertible, then we're going, yes, you're going through a midlife crisis.
It doesn't have to be that obvious. But
that's usually... Usually the kicker.
Yeah, I guess that would be a sign.
I like it a lot.
Let me know.
You know what I also like? So last segment we gave you a congratulations to Jason Kelce and his wife Kylie on their fourth baby. Here's another congratulations. It's not a fourth, it's a first. It's not a baby, it's a book. Jack Fritz announcing yesterday.
How about it?
Fritz has, I'm going to read right from his Twitter. I actually co-wrote a Phillies book alongside my guy, and he says, Kevin Reavy, his buddy. He says, here's the name of the book, John, Ring the Bell. It's a Phillies book. Ring the Bell hits bookshelves May 27th. You can pre-order right now, by the way, at Jack's Twitter account. He says, relive all the glory and pain that makes being a fan of this baseball team so special. The book was so much fun to write, and I really hope you enjoy it. Pre-orders include a signed copy and free shipping. Book ship in June. Sounds like Father's Day time, if you ask me. Sounds like good summer reading time as well. And he says, tell your friends, and the name, the thing he's got at the bottom there, ringthebellbook.com.
I'm going to guess Kevin Reavy did a lot of the heavy lifting on the writing part.
Come on, man.
I'm just kidding.
This is Joe just trying to get Fritz to do the same thing for him.
That's not true.
Should we add book sales to the Joe versus Jack thing?
That'd be funny, actually.
Like that.
That would be funny. He's got a better social media game than me.
Way better!
Yeah, but my book will probably be better, but that's all right. All jokes aside, congrats
to Jack.
Jack's
book, for real.
Listen, when you write a book, man, that's an accomplishment. And obviously, it's right in the bread and butter of his wheelhouse as a Phillies fan. I'm sure it'll be a great book. I look forward to reading it. Check it out when you can. You can get to his Twitter account and pre-order the book. All right, let's go to the phones. 215-592-9494. Sheil Kapadia will join us in about 5 minutes. Dennis in Levittown right now. Dennis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing?
Great, Dennis.
I don't know how I feel about Fritz's book coming out before mine. That's because I started writing mine in 2013 or 14. This is like an 11 to 12 year odyssey.
Wow. It's embarrassing.
A little bit.
I just pumped it out. It started like a year ago.
I sat on it for a long time. I tweaked it during the pandemic.
It seems like you might be sitting on it a little too long.
Maybe.
2013?
It was either 13 or 14.
Did you miss the moment, maybe?
It took a long time.
12 years?
Took a long time to bring it
all
together.
Well, that book about the 2013 Eagles is going to feel really weird coming out now.
Anyway, Dennis, what do you got, buddy?
I take offense to them saying they want to get rid of the twist push. That's a soul dig right at the Eagles. I mean, they could have reworded it. They don't have the data to do it. If the commission was smart, they would say they were looking into certain plays that have the potential for serious injury, and they would ban it. There's other ways they could do it. And Mr. Rogers didn't just cancel this today because he didn't have the votes. Who would do this right before the draft? It's going to cause friction.
Well, to be fair, I mean, this is the time of the year they make these decisions. They don't make rule changes typically in August. So you're in the period of time they should make the rule changes, whichever they choose. I mean, for instance, those that missed it yesterday, they announced for touchbacks on kickoffs, the ball will now be placed on the 35-yard line, which I don't like.
I don't like that at all.
At all.
Horrible.
It's insane to me that you can say in one breath, hey, we're going to do this. Yeah. We're going to punish you for not kicking the ball. We're going to punish you for not allowing these guys to hit one another full speed on kickoff coverage. Yeah. But then we want to be safer. And this tush-push is dangerous. No, it's not.
I will say
0% injury percentage.
The one thing in their defense on the kickoff thing, as it relates to 5 and 10 years ago, when they changed the rule so many times and so much of it was about player safety, they are, though, at least having the players not run all the way down the field. Okay. So the collisions won't be as violent. They won't be.
Right.
I mean, John, it's not the same as a guy running 50 yards down the field.
But what's the difference between the difference is so massive between running downfield.
Right.
Like, even though you're standing stationary as the ball is kicked, so you don't have a running start, you're still running however many yards that is compared to tush-push where you're inches from your target.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
Listen, Dennis, the tush-push might go, man. I mean, the fact that the vote got tabled is very significant, and that the commissioner wants it out is as well.
They should ban all of it. They should say there should be no assisting any ball runner in any part of the field by pulling.
Maybe they
dragging,
just ban football. All right, name the president that saved football. Who knows the answer?
Woodrow Wilson. Half?
Nope. Nope. Double
Teddy
no.
Roosevelt.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Teddy Roosevelt saved football. There was real talk during his presidency of outlawing football. It was too dangerous, causing too many injuries. And the president stepped in. And
Teddy
said,
was the perfect president
Teddy
to be in office at that point.
Really
you know
was,
what I'm saying?
All right, that big stick.
Because you got to remember, they weren't wearing helmets or anything. I think some people died, you know, no helmets. Yeah. And the president's like, all right, maybe we, you know, keep this thing. Dennis, give me an answer, a number and a title.
He went Drago. If they died, they died.
That's so messed up.
5309.
Good answer, buddy.
Nice.
Really good.
Love that one.
Yeah, I like that
does,
a lot, too.
She does.
Yeah. All right, let's get to Sheila in a moment, but I want to play audio of Rich McKay yesterday. We played one thing of his earlier today, but a different piece of audio. McKay, who runs the competition committee, talking yesterday in an interview with Ian Rappaport on tabling the tush push. Here's McKay.
Explain to us why this rule was tabled, what next, and then I'll start with my first question.
Okay.
How did the Eagles respond when it was tabled, knowing that they could have this discussion again in 2 months?
Listen, I thought they handled the discussion in the floor very well. You know, any time you have a rule that people are going to put with one team or two teams in this game, whatever it may be, it's not comfortable because we're not in that business. We'd like to do rules that apply to all, and I think in this case, that's where we tried to take the discussion, is let's talk about all. I mean, what's the history of this? You know, how did we get to this point? In 2004, we took some language out of the book because we were concerned about downfield pushes and whether they could be officiated or not officiated. Not sure we don't regret taking that language out. So we wanted to discuss that. It was a very professional and well-handled discussion by Philadelphia and by the other teams, because there were discussions of, hey, this just doesn't feel like a traditional play. This isn't what football was invented to be. Hey, this feels a little more rugby. We're worried about health and safety. There's all that discussion. And I think that at the end of the day, we kind of said, you know what, let's go back and let's make sure we understand what the 2004 language was. And is there something that says we should bring that language back as opposed to targeting a specific play?
All right. That's Rich McKay. Look, I know a lot of people aren't going to like what he said. I totally get it. I hope people acknowledge this. At least they are finally brought in and out from just the ridiculousness of injury and pay supply. Because that's what the Packers
like
submitted. They did. They looked like idiots.
For Roger Goodell to
no
stand
one's saying
up there.
Pay supply anymore.
No.
I mean, how dumb were the Packers?
Well, that what you hear them speak.
That was dumb.
I mean, it's not a football play. I didn't see you play a lot of good football in your playoff game,
right,
by the way.
Right.
Let me just point that out. But for Roger Goodell to stand there and say, it's a safety issue, we have no data, though.
I know.
I mean, hello?
They got to drop that one also.
100%.
Yeah, the only exception to that, in my opinion, would be if other teams start Frankie Louvillewing it and jumping over
the
pile and try to kill the quarterback. Because that would be dangerous.
Yeah, he was the problem.
Because, you know, if a 250-pound guy lands on a quarterback, I don't care how big John Hurts is, if he lands on the top of his head or his neck or his back or something, that's not good. All right, let's talk more about this and other Eagles issues, because there's other stuff, including we got a draft in 3 weeks. Sheil Kapadia covers it all with the Ringer. Good morning, Sheil.
Good morning, guys. Another month now we get to talk about this, and they might table it another month, and then they might table it another month, but here we are. Yeah, it was the biggest story in the NFL this week. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and Sheil, would you agree with this assessment? This is my opinion. The vote being tabled is not good news for the Eagles. I mean, there is major – look, there's lobbying going on both ends. But the fact that the commissioner wants it out is a significant development for us to find out about in this process. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that because there were multiple reports that I think 16 teams were going to vote against the tush push ban. So if they voted on it yesterday, then it, you know, it would not have passed and it would have been allowed to be in the game in 2025. Now that it's tabled for a month, what the audio you just played, they're going to try to tweak the language and say, hey, can we get 8 more teams on board with this, because you need 24 teams to pass it and then take it out of the game. So we'll see if they're able to do that.
As you understand it, how likely is it that they can gather that sort of support to get this thing canned?
You know, I would still say more likely than not that they're not going to get it banned. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that. It feels about 50-50 to me. Like I said, half the league right now would not have voted for it the way it's written. So by banning all pushing, which sounds like the direction they're going to go in based on what Rich McKay said right there, are you going to be able to get half of those 16 teams on board? I mean, I'm still a little skeptical. I think there are a lot of coaches and GMs and owners who look at this and say, okay, you know, we're not buying the nonsense that you're selling here with the pace of play, with the safety. There's no data here. Let's act like reasonable adults and say, hey, they came up with a great play that's very successful. But this is the nature of sports. That's what I don't get. You know, the nature of sports is you try to come up with something that other teams cannot stop. Eventually, they find a way to stop it, and then you move on to the other thing. Mm-hmm. You don't change the rule because you can't stop it. And I think you heard some coaches, Dan Campbell, Jim Harbaugh, some other guys kind of echo that sentiment this week.
So what about the push timing? We were hearing, hey, what they object to is the timing of the push itself. It can't happen right at the snap of the ball. Like, where did that go? It feels like all of this is so disorganized and sort of all over the place.
Well, let me just say this, John. What I think they're doing is they're broadening the scope entirely. I think that's over now. I mean, meaning, Sheil, my interpretation is they're opening up the whole thing. I mean, if you listen to what McKay's saying, he's talking now about whether it looks like a football play and all that. That's way beyond what the Packers submitted.
Yeah, no, the language in the rule, the word immediately was used, which is a subjective term. I mean, if you wait half a second, is it immediately? If you wait, the whole thing is nonsense. I mean, you know, they say safety, and there's been no injuries documented. They say pace of play, and the only time there was a pace of play issue was when Frankie Louvu was jumping over the line. That had nothing to do with the offense. That had to do with how the defense was defending it. So I do agree with Joe that I think they're going to change this whole thing and say, you know, rather than just this one play, I think they're going to take out immediately and they're going to say, let's change the language and say no pushing of another offensive player is allowed, going back to that pre-2004 rule book. And that way they can make the argument, hey, this isn't just targeted at the Eagles. Mm-hmm. This is going to be something that maybe affects all teams.
If our offense were to run quarterback sneaks without guys pushing him from behind, how effective would it be in converting goal line and short yardage plays, in your estimation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I still think it'll be really good, honestly.
Me too.
I don't know that, you know, anybody who thinks this is just going to sort of all of a sudden make the Eagles have a big short yardage issue. I don't know that that's going to be the case. Jalen Hurts is, you know, quads and hamstrings, and it still is what it is, and he's going to be able to push for half a yard, a yard. I mean, Tom Brady did that for years, and I would imagine they would look at that and they would study that and say, we have a stronger quarterback than Tom Brady, and we're going to continue to be successful doing that.
So I agree. Landon and Jordan Mailata.
No, sure. I agree with that to a large extent, maybe even entirely. But I will say this. I think what will change is the frequency for which the Eagles then choose to go for it. So let me give you a scenario, Sheil. Obviously, this stuff will play out as more data piles up. If the tush push is gone and the Eagles have multiple games, they'll get a sense of how often they want to go for it. But let's just hypothetical. Game one, tush push doesn't exist. It's the first drive. Eagles have the ball in their own 42, and it's 4th and 1. It's their own 42. 4th and 1. Not 1.5, not a half. A full yard. Does Nick Sirianni go for that? First week of September, 4th and 1 from his own 42.
I think yes, you know, because I think organizationally that has been the philosophy back to when I covered the team full-time with Doug Peterson, that this isn't necessarily the aggressiveness on fourth down, isn't necessarily a coaching thing. This is from top down, Jeffrey Lurie, analytics department, Howie Roseman, down to the coaches. So I think there will be conversations had in the preseason that, hey, even if we can't do the brotherly shove, we're still going to be aggressive, and let's make sure that in the spring, that in training camp, we're focusing on whatever short yardage solutions we need to come up with to continue to be aggressive. Now, Sirianni, on the other hand, I think by nature is actually a little conservative.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Game stuff, so I could see a scenario where, hey, the first month of the season, if those short yardage solutions are failing, then all of a sudden that scenario you painted in week five, you're saying, let's go ahead and punt the football here. But I think to start the season, they would still be pretty aggressive. Yeah.
All right, Sheila, let's get to some other stuff. So Lurie spoke yesterday. I'm going to use the phrase basically denied. Well, he said there's no directive on, you know, cash, spending less cash than the past. I don't think I buy it. Both Howie and Lurie talked about that part of the strategy is to sign players down the road who will be free agents that are their own players, but free agents in future years. What are you hearing? Because I've heard a lot from a few people about that this cash thing is real with the Eagles, that Lurie is looking to spend less cash. What do you know about this issue? What are you hearing about it?
Well, there's always a limit to it. You know, I think they've tried to use every tool they can to navigate the salary cap and look for ways to exploit the salary cap so that they can spend as much as they can and keep as many players as they can. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie has spent, I think, more cash than any owner in the NFL over the last 10 years. So I don't think that's going to change. But at the same time, you know, I always view these things and I say, all right, is this spin? Is this messaging? I actually don't think that's the case here. I thought what they were saying is actually pretty valid. When you look at the number of stars they have on this team making more than $15 million per year, and then you look at the next 3 years, I mean, this has been a three-year stretch of draft that they haven't had in a long time. Where you look at Quinyon Mitchell, if he continues this trajectory, he's going to get paid over $30 million per year at cornerback. If Jalen Carter has is in the running for defensive player of the year next year, he could be making over $40 million next year. So I think they're looking at that and saying, let's have a long-term plan, maybe looking at the last time they won the Super Bowl where they kept some veterans, they didn't have that planning, where they didn't have those draft resources, and it didn't last. It wasn't a long run. I think they want to expand this window where they can try to win Super Bowl. So I actually believe what they're saying there.
What's going to happen with Dallas Goedert? And how does Grant Calcaterra compare to him as a blocker? Harrison Bryant, Kylan Granson, Nick Muse. We got a bunch of guys I don't know at the tight end position. Is this team ready to lose Dallas Goedert?
Yeah, it's a bunch of dart throws at tight end right now, and I would say no. You know, I think that's one certainly that would be felt in a big way. I don't think there's really any comparison with Dallas Goedert as a blocker compared to Grant Calcaterra. And when you're talking about one of the most run-heavy offenses in the NFL, when Kurt was out, we talked about that was an issue, that their tight ends were getting blown up in the run game, yeah. And the run game wasn't as good. So that's another one where I'm not, you know, I buy their reasoning, but I'm not saying these are easy decisions and these are the right decisions. You know, we could certainly have a situation where we're in week six, week seven next year going, man, they really miss Goddard. They really miss Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and maybe they shouldn't have been looking down the road, and maybe they should have just been looking at, hey, how can we win the Super Bowl in 2025, and we'll figure out the rest later. So based on all their comments, it sounds to me like Dallas Goedert most likely will not be on the team. However, I think there is a potential scenario where maybe he doesn't find another team willing to pay him what he wants. They don't find that draft compensation, and he comes back at a lower number. I don't think that's the most likely scenario, but that's what happened with Josh Sweat last year. Mm. And so I think that's possible that happens this year.
Well, that would be best case scenario. It feels so odd. It feels so odd the way that Nick came out and basically stated that it's all but certain that he's gone.
Well, he was talking past tense, and you know, do you think that was the real indication that he's gone, or do you think that was sly like a fox, and that was because we know Sirianni loves Goddard. I mean, Goddard's been a really good player for him. Do you think that was strategic by Sirianni, like, hey, dude, we really will get rid of you if you don't
we
take
mean
less
business.
Money.
If you don't sign this like reduced contract, we're actually going to cut you.
Yeah, what do you make
or
of what
Sirianni or send you elsewhere?
Do you think there was purpose there, Sheil, or not on Sirianni?
There could have been. I don't think so. Only because you heard Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie talk about it too. Now maybe they all said, "Hey, let's put the pressure on him a little bit and say, you know, make it sound like he's going to be gone if he doesn't agree to a lower number." But, I mean, Jeffrey Lurie put him in the same category as Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, which is not an indication that the guy is going to be back on the team. So, again, I think it's possible. If you ask me what the most likely scenario is, I would say the most likely scenario, based on their comments, based on what we've seen this offseason, is that Goddard is not back with the team.
Sheil, let's get to the draft. So it's in 23 days. And it doesn't feel like it is because we haven't really talked about it yet. 32nd pick always, you know, complicates the conversation because no one is going to pound it. Like, I remember Ike a few years ago saying, they got to go get Christian McCaffrey. And boy, was he right that he turned into a great player. Bijan was a fun and fascinating conversation.
He's also turned into a great player.
Well, he has. But thank God they got Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? So, but I mean, Sheil, 32 presents a different, you know, it's a different thing. But I mean, even after 32 last year, the Eagles got Cooper DeJean in the second round. So give us a couple things that everybody should know about this draft, players or positions. What should we have our eye on as we obviously are going to start cranking up coverage soon?
Yeah, well, it is a very good in a couple spots. Defensive tackle is one of those spots, and I think that's certainly an area that the Eagles could look to address very early in this draft. There's a bunch of starting caliber defensive tackles in this draft. So you look at that, Jordan Davis, the fifth-year option coming up on him. You lose Milton Williams. I think that's certainly a position to keep an eye on. And it is a pretty good tight end draft. We were just talking about Dallas Goedert. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to get somebody who's going to come in and replace him right away, but there are a bunch of very good tight ends in this draft where you say, hey, can you pull off a Cooper DeJean in a second round and get someone who comes in and is a starter right away? So those are some of the things that certainly stand out to me. The quarterback situation will be interesting to monitor because when you have the 32nd pick, sometimes the team will say, hey, let's trade back into the first round for a quarterback because we want that fifth-year option for them. So that's a scenario where if there's somebody, one of these guys, like there's this quarterback, Jackson Dart from Ole Miss, who some people think, hey, he could sneak in to the first round. Well, if he's still there at 32 and a team likes him, now maybe you trade back and you don't pick on the first day, but you pick up some more draft capital there for days two and days three. So those are some of the things to keep an eye on.
You know, Sheil, you referenced that fifth-year option for first-round picks. Help me remember the rules here. Isn't it that the Eagles need to declare this offseason whether they're going to pick up Jordan Davis's fifth year?
They do. It's in May. I forget the exact date for the deadline. I think it would be about $12 million. So if you pick that up, you're guaranteeing that Jordan Davis on his fifth year, which would not be this season, but the season after, is on the roster for $12 million, which is a very tricky decision.
Sheil, I think that's a decline.
It's a decline for me.
With all this cap issue and cash issues, I think they got to decline that, right?
I am with you. Now, here's the caveat. If Vic Fangio says, I got big plans for this guy. Milton Williams is gone. Davis is going to play a lot more snaps next year. Trust me, he is an emerging talent. You're going to be wishing a year from now that you paid him that. That would be the one caveat. If Vic, I would trust Vic Fangio with this. I would literally put the decision in his hands. Do you want this guy back at this number, or do you think we can upgrade? Because last year, Vic Fangio told us what he thought of Jordan Davis, and that's that good player on first and second down. Not a full-time player, playing about, 35-40% of the snaps. I mean, that's not a guy in the – you can look in the NFL. There's no defensive tackle who plays 35% of the snaps who gets paid $12 million per year. Yeah. So it's all about the projection from Vic Fangio. If he says, there's more to this guy, trust me, then you think about it. But I tend to be with you guys. If you've got these issues with cash and cap, and you're not sure about him, I don't know how you can guarantee the $12 million.
Yeah, I'm with you. So the last time that we traded out of the first round, it was exactly what you were talking about, a team who wanted to come into the first round for a fifth year on a quarterback, and that was Lamar Jackson. The guy we ended up taking in that draft was Dallas Goedert.
That's right.
Which, man, really brings that all full circle now, doesn't it?
Well, it worked well for both teams.
Yeah,
when you did. When you really view it. I mean, Lamar is a better player than Goddard, but the Eagles have won a Super Bowl since then.
Yeah, yeah. And now here we are not willing to pay for Dallas Goddard's services, even though he's amazing.
Yeah, Shil, let me ask you this related to Goddard, because I hear you think he's probably gone. Probably, but not definitely. We have a Twitter poll today, Shil. Brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin's got the new 2025 Chevy Trax in stock now, starting at only $21,495. Together, let's drive. See Armin's inventory at ArminChevy.com. What would be your answer to this poll question, Shiel? Which is more likely for the 2025 Eagle season? That Goddard is an Eagle, or that the tush push remains legal?
I would say that the tush push remains legal. I think that's more 50-50, maybe even 60-40, that it's still allowed. And I would put Dallas Goedert at a lower percentage than that. So, yeah, I think it's more likely that they are still able to run that play than it would be that Dallas Goedert is back. Maybe you guys are right and they are being sly, and we'll say a week from now, hey, Dallas Goedert agreed to come back at whatever it is, $9 million, whatever.
Let me give you the argument on that. I'm going to go to Nick Sirianni, press conference guy during the season. That Sirianni mode. Sirianni is big on not saying things because he doesn't want to create a competitive disadvantage for his team. He'll even say, like, I'm not going there because, you know, I don't want the other team to know. Like, I think he's very cognizant that what he says publicly gets picked up all over the place. And, you know, clearly the Eagles and Goddard are in a standoff. That is obvious, very obvious. It would not shock me at all if Sirianni said what he said yesterday as a last resort to go public, to just put it in Goddard's brain, we are serious about cutting you if you don't take less. I think there is a good chance that that was purposeful yesterday.
It could be. And listen, they could make the argument, hey, we were in this situation with Josh Sweat last year. He ended up taking the pay cut because he didn't find another team he wanted to go to. We didn't find a trade partner. He came back. He played well. He had a great Super Bowl. And, hey, look at that contract he got from the Arizona Cardinals. So they can say, hey, you know, you want that big money. Come back. You're going to be on a great offense. You're going to be a great team. You're going to be in the spotlight. Then next year, you're going to be able to hit free agency, and you're going to be able to cash in then. It's not a bad option for you. So it all depends on the player, the situation, the hurt feelings, all those things. You know, if I'm Goddard, I'm saying, you know, I played for you guys for a while. Now you want me to take a pay cut? We just won a Super Bowl, and you don't have anyone to replace me? So I can see both sides of it. It all depends what his other options are.
Yeah. Hey, Shil, final thing. We got this other poll question. Who's going to be the Philly's second-best position player this year? So knowing that Bryce is obviously number one, is it going to be Schwarber, who we're counting as a position player, even though it's a DH? Basically the regulars. Is it Schwarber, Trey Turner, or someone else? Who would you vote for?
Oh, if you're counting Schwarber, even though he's a DH, then it's got to be Schwarber. I mean, Schwarber's looking spelt. Schwarber's hitting a home run every game. Schwarber's in a contract year. Yes, he is. As you said that, I was panicking. I was going, I'm not picking Trey Turner. I don't know who else I'm going to pick on this team. So, yes, if you're giving me the option of Schwarber, that's an easy answer for me.
Hey, Shil, wonderful work, bud. We'll talk to you quite a bit on the show coming up as we get closer to the draft, because we really do have to. John, we got to start wrapping our arms around the freaking draft.
Here, let me give you
one.
Let me give you one name.
Yeah.
For the people listening, if you want to go check out some YouTube highlights, Malachi Starks, safety from Georgia. I think he is a player who could be available around 32 with a very fun player, another Georgia guy who could slip because safeties don't get taken that high. If I were kind of giving you three names right now, he would be certainly on that list of potential candidates at 32. So you can wet your beak with some Malachi Stark highlights on YouTube today.
Shil, good stuff, buddy. Stay well. We'll talk to you perhaps next week. Thanks, man.
Take care, guys.
All right, Shil Kapadia. He's a monster on the draft. I mean, when we get closer, we're gonna be leaning
Joe,
on Shil.
Joe, when was the last time the Eagles drafted a safety in the first round?
I don't know. Have they?
James and I were talking
There's
about
a possibility
that on Saturday.
They haven't. Oh, well, Rhea just pointed at James, so so James is right. I was getting around to probably saying that. I was trying to figure out if Tom Brookshire was a draft pick. Or was he a cornerback? Or was there a draft back then?
I don't know. He was technically a corner at the time. Yeah, I could be wrong, though.
So they've never drafted a safety?
Dawkins was second.
Right.
Yeah.
Jaquan Jarrett was second.
How many games did Jaquan Jarrett last with the Eagles?
One.
Not many.
Games. No, games.
What was it? I thought it was one or two seasons.
17 games.
It was just one. So
they
one
cut,
plus.
They cut
That's
him.
What I thought. It was in the second year,
They
right?
cut, John, they cut a second-round draft pick after the first game of the second year.
I thought he made it into
Think
the second
that.
Year, and it was
He made it into
there.
The second year and played one game. They cut him.
What did he do?
He stunk.
Well, and then That's he went to did. The Jets and had a career. Like, he was in the league for like a decade or something, you know, for a while.
That's odd.
It is bizarre. 215-592-9494. All right. Up ahead, more of what Lurie said. I want to get to the thing about his son, Julian Lurie, who someday is going to run the Eagles. That and more. Phone calls on all these topics on 94 WIP.
There's so much buzz surrounding Benari Jewelers' April bridal event. That's because they're breaking all the rules to make sure you get the best prices of the year. And it's this weekend. It's the biggest ever sale on engagement rings and wedding bands. If you've been shopping for that ring, you can throw all of your previous pricing expectations out the door. Because this weekend, you'll save up to 20% on thousands of rings. Not only will you save, but you'll also meet some of the top bridal designers. This is such a big deal at Benari. Designers have flown in just for this occasion, and they're bringing their entire collections with them. The ones she loves on Benari's Instagram. And best of all, they're all on sale. This weekend, save up to 20% on virtually all Benari engagement rings and wedding bands. The best pricing of the whole year. Now you can get something even more special than you'd planned. That's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Details at BenariJewelers.com. Don't miss the best ring buying opportunity ever at Benari Jewelers, Exton and Newtown Square.